He killed his mother in her bed and then left the home and went to the school.
Young people who are sort of closing their own walls around them are right at the cutting edge.
What aren't we learning in all the study of who these people are that we can't figure out how to prevent?
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello and welcome to Best Case, Worst Case. This is Jim Clementi, retired FBI profiler, former New York City prosecutor, writer, producer of CBS's Criminal Minds and Paramount Plus's Criminal Minds Season 16, Evolution. And with me today is...
Hi, everybody. It's Francie Hakes, former state and federal prosecutor and executive producer and writer on Audible's Midwest Monster. Jim, I'm very excited. We have I'm going to call it the big crossover episode. That's literally going to be the title. The big crossover episode with the ladies from the Stop the Killing podcast. And wow. I want them to introduce themselves because this is a big crossover episode. And so we're doing both podcasts all at once. So why don't we start with you, Kate? Can you introduce yourself to our listeners?
Sure can. Catherine Schweit. I am also retired from the FBI. I am the author of Stop the Killing, which is the name of our podcast with my co-host sitting next to you, Sarah Ferris. And also we do a blog by that name, or we do a podcast by that name, Stop the Killing. And I spent my time in the FBI working national security matters until the Sandy Hook massacre. And because of that, I was pulled from what I was working on and sent to solve all mass killings in the world. I think we're doing a great job of that so far. But I led the FBI's program for a number of years. And then when I retired, I continued to work on that. That's all I do every day is work on trying to stop the killing. It's kind of sad.
And Sarah?
Well, I am a true crime podcaster by accident. So my very first podcast is called Conning the Con and happened out of my poor little sister's experience of dating a serial con man that she met on Tinder, swiped right, and then found out that he was actually not who he said he was. And it's kind of a story that you think, oh, I've heard that before. But the kicker was he didn't know that we'd discovered his real identity. So we hit record and spent the next 2.5 months tearing his life apart. So that's Conning the Con.
That is awesome. I love it. I know.
It's just like the shirt you get at Crime Con. I'm basically a detective. You totally work.
Exactly. Exactly. And then I've got another true crime podcast called Clueless, The Long Con. And for my sins, I have a sustainability podcast called Guilty Greenie, which kind of is true crime because it's more about my crimes against the planet. So that's me. And also, I work with the lovely Catherine Schweit on Stop the Killing.
Well, and you probably can't tell, but I live in the United States and Sarah does not. So that makes our podcast recording interesting. Well, so here's a true crime question. Listening to Sarah, where do you think she was born?
Well,
I know the answer to this, so I'm not going to answer.
I do.
Because that would be cheating. But...
Well, that's good, because that means nobody's going to say Australia.
I know. No, but I'm going to say New Zealand.
Wow. Yeah.
Cheater.
100%, Jim. 100%. But I do live in London at the moment, so I'm all about working the time zones.
That's great.
Well, which is perfect. So, Jim, we're so super lucky because the Stop the Killing podcast ladies are going to talk to us about a crime we haven't talked about on this podcast, the best case, worst case, in all 5 of our years and 300 and some episodes. So I'm really excited to get an inside look at something that's really difficult and is kind of, I'm not sure you can quite call it an epidemic in this country, but we've certainly had a lot of mass shootings and a lot of school shootings. So as Catherine Schweitz said, she is an expert in the Sandy Hook school massacre case. And so we're going to talk to her about that in this podcast. So let's get started.
The very first episode that we did was on the Sandy Hook massacre. Mm-hmm. And that elementary school massacre in Connecticut, Newtown, Connecticut. And we wanted to just introduce that subject today, in part just to kind of reflect about, you know, kind of where we've come as a country even and worldwide, and also what we've learned. I think that's where you guys can help us just add your insight into that. Because the Sandy Hook massacre, which occurred December 14th, 2012, and there was a kid who lived not a few miles away who
we will not name because
we will not,
that is not ever going to be our intention.
That's perfect. Yay. That's our motto. We don't name a kid. And he was out of high school in terms of age, but he had come from this little town of 5,000 people, Newtown, Connecticut. And he killed his mother in her bed and then left the home and went to the school, came through the front door of the school, hunted down kids in the first couple of classrooms, and he shot people along the way. And in the end, there were 20 children and 6 women killed at the school.
I just met with Andre Simmons last week, and I'm sure, Catherine, Andre, he is the most amazing person and FBI agent and profiler, and what an incredible mind he has. And we were talking about this very subject, and when he mentioned the statistic of how many shootings, mass shootings we have in this country every year, I was blown away.
Yeah, it is not a job career that, you know, that's disappearing, unfortunately. It's shocking.
Can you say the statistic?
So absolutely. When we started working on this at the FBI and trying to say, hey, after the Sandy Hook massacre, how many of these kinds of shootings are there? You know, we looked at law enforcement reports. We pulled out real great data. And in the first 14 years that we put together, the 14 years of data, we had, you know, 6 incidents average a year in the first 7 years. In the second 7 years of the study that we did, there were 16 incidents a year. We're like, wow, that's terrible. We went from 6 to 16. Last year in the United States, there were 61 mass murders using the same methodology that the FBI's used for 20 years. 61.
Now, I don't know exactly what the data is. I've done some research on this topic with respect to what the media calls mass shooting. And I have a little bit of dispute with some of the cases that are included in this, like the school category, because it includes things like something happens, it's a drive-by and there's someone in a parking lot. And that's not what we think about as like the case you're going to talk about, Sandy Hook, which is a school shooting case, or most of us think of as like the Columbine shooting, where you've got people who go to the school, students or people who were just recently students, go into a school and it's a targeted killing inside the school of students. But yeah, I'd like to know what criteria FBI used, Kate.
Yeah, I think that's one of our initial struggles. Right after Sandy Hook, we were like, hey, Sandy Hook was December 14th, 2012. January, that was my new job for the rest of my life. And, you know, we were thinking, well, is this bad? Is this, and I have to tell you, the Department of Education people, I was on a team, White House team, and from then Vice President Biden's office, we were gathered together to, okay, solve this problem. And the Department of Education people were saying, this isn't a problem. The media is just covering this a lot. There isn't a problem like this in the United States. And
well, what is a problem? I mean,
well, it is a exactly. What is right? 20 dead children, 20 dead 6-year-olds, and 6 women who were teaching and working in the school were dead. That's what happened. So clearly, you know, it was a problem. Yeah. Clearly, it's a problem. But what What we faced was the Department of Education, truthfully, they were like, hey, it's not a problem. We don't want to talk about this in schools. And so when we were doing the research, we had to come up with a solid methodology that would work, you know, that we could replicate and pull, you know, that's research, right? So mm-hmm. I used people in part like Andre Simmons from BAU to get his advice. We worked with Texas State University and we put this criteria together that said, we're not going to talk about shootings that are drug related. We're not talking about shootings that are gang related shootings. We're not going to talk about shootings that are in the home, that are domestic killings, murder, suicides in the homes. Because what we're looking for were the criteria, the situations that were occurring in public that were threatening the public and that law enforcement was being called to the scene. How could we protect the public better? So we set this methodology up and we've used the same methodology, taking out those random cases of drive-bys. It's not a school shooting if somebody happens to shoot somebody in front of a school and it's a gang-related thing. It's not a school mm-hmm. shooting. So I agree with you, Francie. The numbers are confusing and when you throw all these numbers out there, then you're not really looking for a way to solve the problem. You're just trying to put higher numbers on the
right.
board.
And by defining right. it narrowly, we can actually focus on that particular issue.
Exactly.
So the 61 that you're talking about, is that 61 mass shootings or 61 school shootings? Because
a brilliant question. It's 61 active shooters, right, as defined by the federal government. A killing or attempting to kill people in a crowded space. That's what an active shooter is. Under federal law, a mass killing is three or more people is a mass killing.
In a particular incident, right.
But there's no agreed upon, we're so close, but there's no completely agreed upon definition for mass shootings. So this is where you see the numbers different, because a lot of researchers, like the Violence Project, they use four or more people killed. But the FBI does not have a number cut. So any shooting that occurs that involves multiple people being, you know, killed in a crowded space could potentially be an active shooter and fits into the FBI criteria. And so a lot of the shootings, all the shootings that the FBI has, that 61, they're all mass shootings in our general's term, but they're not all, they're not all three or more or four or more.
Right.
And researchers use different numbers.
Right. And part of that is because of the qualitative nature of that definition. What they want, they're trying to get at, is people who go to a public place and intend to kill multiple people. Some of them are stopped before that desire is fully realized, but they are still motivated in the same way or in the same general categories of ways, and they are intending to do that. So that's the intention behind using that in the definition.
Definitely. I mean, when you have a family member who kills, you know, three children in their home, that's a terrible tragedy. And then they kill themselves. That's a terrible tragedy.
That's a domestic violence situation.
But it's right. It's not a public risk. And our goal, even on this podcast, even in the book that I wrote, all the work I did in the FBI, our goal is to prevent them from happening. So right. The way to do that is to educate the public, I think.
Well, and Kate, so I have a question. So, you know, I think the first school shooting that I'm really aware of was the Columbine shooting in Colorado. And that was two offenders 99. Who attended school there, who went in and targeted, you know, a bunch of kids and killed a bunch of children. Horrific case. And I think a coach or teacher or both. So you go back to 1999, and then you come forward here to 2022, where we had the most recent school shooting in Uvalde, Texas, who was not a student who went there, but someone who lived close by and killed a bunch of children and teachers. It was just heartbreaking and horrific violence. And I have to ask the question of you, and then, of course, I want Jim to answer this, too. That's 23 years apart. What aren't we doing? what aren't we learning in all the study of who these people are that we can't figure out how to prevent? Now, I'm a longtime prosecutor, so I understand that preventing violence is a pretty tall task. So I get that it's not easy, but I'm just wondering what you think, Kate, about why in 23 years we haven't literally stopped the Killing? Why can't we, especially when you're talking about school shooters, because right. especially if they go to the school, they're people that are known to people. They're known to teachers. They're known to their classmates, their families. You know, they're not the kind of the one, like the guy in Sandy Hook was a little bit different because he didn't attend that school. He didn't attend Sandy Hook Elementary. So what,
I don't think
what explains that?
I don't think that it is at all a necessary component in a school shooting environment or in an active shooting discussion to limit to only people who have some connection to the location. I mean, certainly there are situations in employment where somebody is a disgruntled employee and they go back to their place of employment or former employment and they commit a mass shooting with the intention of killing as many people as they can. But there are plenty of other people who have no connection to the actual location who go into a mall or a shopping center or a store and commit a mass murder with absolutely no connection to that place. So I don't think the connection is really what's critical. And also, Francie, just so you know, I mean, I know, I hate to have to admit this, but I know you're quite a bit younger than I am, but back in January of 1979, there was a school shooting, and it was actually committed by a young female, and there was actually, it's been popularized in media, which I'm not going to mention, but it was a very deliberate attempt to kill as many, you know, students and teachers as was possible. So that person took advantage of sort of security procedures. And I think this is a topic that we're going to get into later, but of knowing security procedures and using them to the shooter's advantage. So this has been going on for a lot longer than 1999. I mean, that was 20 years earlier than that. And we still have the problem. So I will, you know, just add to Francie's question, you know, since 1979, why haven't we been able to stop this?
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
So the first, when we talk about these active shooters, actually the first one we count dates back to 66 when at your Texas Tower shooting. Right. And that was a sniper situation.
Oh, that's right. That was
situation.
Was that University of Texas or?
Mm-hmm. UT campus. Yes. And up on the tower, he climbed up to the tower and shot a bunch of people for a long time until law enforcement could climb up there and a couple of volunteers could climb up there and take him out. But, you know, your question is, you know, why can't we stop this? It, you know, after all these years, I would say my short answer is because it's really a moving target in terms of what we're dealing with, probably the biggest moving target that we're wrangling with right now is social media and what is appearing on social media, because social media has given people who were, you know, post Columbine has given them a life. Columbine was 99. It's given them a whole other life to access other people, other shooters. They're conversing on websites that are like, I want to be a school shooter.com kind of website, you know, and getting advice from each other. And it's just, you know, it's not just like one channel. It's 8chan, 4chan, Discord, Twitch, Twitter, Facebook, everything. Every time a new thing comes on, TikTok, right? As a new thing comes on, the platforms.
So social media is undoing what we have been attempting to do for at least two decades, which is right. to try to cloak the identity and the notoriety,
celebrity,
of people who do this. And, you know, I think there's another issue as well that is also very, very difficult and complicating. And that is that many of these, if not most, are connected to suicide by cop. And that the intention, well,
yeah, I wouldn't go that far,
but
I wouldn't go that, that, I wouldn't go that far.
That they're not all connected. They're not, many of them are not, or most are not connected to suicide intention, ideation.
30 to 40%, depending on how many years you look at, 30 to 40% of them have suicide ideations and execute it.
Okay. All right. So then a significant portion of these are connected to suicidal ideation. And that may be that they intend to take their own lives in the process of this mass shooting, this active shooting event that they're creating, or they intend to be killed by a cop, and then that's suicide by cop. And because of that, there's really no big stick prevention options, because the person intends to not live beyond it. And that, unfortunately, is a really complicating factor.
Well, yeah, it's like if you want to kill the president, the Secret Service likes to say that if someone is determined enough, you know, it's going to be really hard to stop them if they're willing to die for it. Because, you know, obviously men with guns keep most of us from doing crazy things, but it doesn't seem to keep them. I think my biggest question for you, Kate, in studying this, and I really do want to get into Sandy Hook so you can, because since we haven't covered it on Best Case, Worst Case, I want to make sure our people, especially our international listeners, know what we're talking about. But when it comes to the kind of people, the kind of person that becomes a mass shooter, it's very hard for me to understand. Like, I understand the motivation for an awful lot of criminals. You know, most people, I think, do. You understand. You can understand a drug dealer. You can even understand a lot of murders or even a domestic violence murder. Not, I mean, I don't understand it in the sense that it's fine. I mean, I understand they have a motive that at least has some rationale behind it. I feel like with these mass killings, I don't understand how anyone who is angry at one person or two people or even a school administration for whatever's happening to them or to McDonald's for however they've been treated. I don't understand how they leap from disgruntled to I'm going to kill people innocent, completely unrelated to my source of aggravation. How is that connection made? I don't get that.
Well, you asked a question before. I just want to put some facts on the table just for conversations. Some of the research that the FBI's done shows, here's one of the things that we found. Like, half of these shootings really occur in places of business. So the average, and only a quarter of them occur in a school environment. Actually, now that we have 25 years of data, it's really 20%. So schools are more... are very low on the list in terms of where it happens, but also who the shooter is. In schools, high schools and in middle schools, the shooter is from the school almost exclusively. Mm-hmm. And so in businesses, in a business that's closed to pedestrian traffic, you know, postal service, boxed office, you know, big box store, packing store, lawyer's office. Those offices, their shooter is inside. So it's insider threat. So, and then, you know, the others are seemingly more random, but FBI research is showing that there's some, that like 65% of the time, there's some connections maybe to the site. And so when you talk about why somebody moves, you know, I think not to use Jim speak, but I think he would agree that generally we use that Calhoun and Weston view of the pathway to violence, the pathway to targeted violence, because this is not a snap decision. People say, oh, he just snapped. No, this is a pathway to targeted violence that starts with an ideation. They're angry about something. I think that they're brittle people in general. That's a kind of a term that I use, but they're angry about something, they fester on it, and then they start to be grievance collectors. They get angry, 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 and whatever that ideation is, they decide they're going to solve it this way. And maybe it's a murder-suicide, or maybe it's just, I'm going to kill all these people. I think we've heard a lot of people say, we see a lot of writings that say, they're making me do this, they drove me to this, that whole concept. But the pathway to violence is, in the intervention part, is that they have the ideation, but then they do planning and preparation, and that planning and preparation, buying the tools of destruction, changing their behaviors, changing their own self, stop taking medications or physically changing, buying the clothes that they want, becoming somebody who they think is worthy of this new person that they want to be. And that planning and preparation, surveillance of the sites, things like that, those are all visible signs that people can see. And that's what we school in Stop the Killing. We school people in what are those signs that you can look for, that you could report. And they strike in after that point. So I think that that time period, that mental instability that comes with deciding that you're willing to do that is really, you know, that's Jim's territory, right?
Well, but Catherine, when you mentioned grievance collectors, and we would call them injustice collectors as well. And this is a point for intervention, because typically those injustice collectors will talk about it. They will verbalize this. They will post about this. They will let people know, the different people over the course of their lives that have done some injustice to them. And this builds over time. So for educators, for people out in the real world who hear people talk about these things, that should be looked at as a red flag. And that's an opportunity for intervention. Yeah. Whether or not they're going to intend at some point to actually commit an active shooting event, these are human beings, and we should be treating them at that point, not at the point at which they've already made the decision to go out and kill people to address these issues that they feel have been building up over their whole lives.
The one thing that I would say, though, Francie, to your question, the one thing that I have heard over and over again as we've covered these cases on Stop the Killing is the word hatred. And it's hatred without borders that strikes me. You know, these people are using the internet to encourage each other from, you know, Christchurch, New Zealand to Buffalo, you know, New York. That seems to be the word that always strikes me, is that they feel no other emotion than hatred for all. And it's really terrifying. And I'm like you, I can't get my head around it. I totally don't understand.
No, I don't understand the target picking. I do think I can speak a little bit. The internet and social media component is so terrible, but also so interesting, because, you know, some 20 years ago, when the internet was first sort of really coming online for the majority of people, prior to that, we in the American, in this country anyway, we in the United States had basically eradicated child pornography because it was sent through the mails. And the post office had done an amazing job of eradicating that transport to and from this country and to and from states inside this country. But then the internet came and child pornography started to be transmitted upon the internet. And just like you, Kate, have been talking about with these groups of people on the different 4chan and 8chan and whatever channels sort of supporting each other and coming and becoming a mass shooter. That's exactly what happened with those with a sexual interest of children. They started trading this child pornography, this child exploitation material, and then they all started talking together and forming communities of support, which of course eventually morphs into offenders who are supporting each other in how they are offending and even teaching each other how to be better, more efficient law enforcement, elusive offenders. And so I think that's interesting, but that the internet is kind of a commonality in some of these horrific increases in crime types. But I still just don't understand. Well,
technology
targeting.
Will always do that.
No,
Francie.
You're right. Even Jim. At it the can time, be good and bad for
right.
sure.
But even at the time, the technology of the day that undercut all of the efforts of the FBI and the U.S. Postal Service was Polaroid pictures.
Yeah.
Pictures that you could develop instantly in the privacy of your own home or den or cave or lair. And that actually allowed them to continue that process without having to acquire it from outside. That was technology. And this is our, this is our bane of our existence, is that technology is a double-edged sword. And unfortunately, many times the government and law enforcement is, because they don't have the money to keep up with the cutting edge of technology, we're behind the eight ball. We never actually get ahead of the curve now because technology advances so fast and it's so complicated. But young people who spend the time in their own little environment, who are sort of closing their own walls around them, but only interacting through social media, through the internet, those people are right at the cutting edge of technology, and they'll use it against us.
Maybe this is a good hopeful sign, but just yesterday, one of the AGs in New York popped out some request to say, look, maybe there needs to be some better guardrails on some of the federal laws. Now, that's not a new story in some ways, but I think raising the profile of, we are always trying to chase technology. We have a couple of things that prevent us from chasing technology solutions. One of them is that firearms manufacturers are protected under the law from being sued by federal law. But also, there are very few guardrails on how the moderation decisions. There's a federal statute that protects online platforms from their moderating decisions on what they decide to take down or put a stop to in terms of. And they are always defaulting to the privacy world. Privacy, people can do whatever they want, of course. And that's always a legal balance, privacy. But, we do have guardrails on so many other things that can infringe on somebody's privacy rights and communication privacy rights. And right now, the guardrails are not there under federal law to even try to go after or try to change or modify something that might be there in a civil case or a criminal case against the online. So that online is just there, and it's just going to continue. One of the things that I've been preaching to the walls about, and to anybody who will listen, is that we have to stop thinking that news media is social media, because social media is just that, and it's going to continue. And the Christchurch killer, right? In New Zealand was an admirer of the Columbine killers. It's so sad.
So they spread, the information is spread, and there are little or no checks on that. And that's a problem. And we need to address it as a country and as a world, actually, and as that example tells us. So there's so much more we need to talk about. And Sarah and Catherine, we are so happy to have you with us. And we need you to come back next week so that we can continue our discussion. We have so many more questions and so many items to discuss. So thank you for being here. And to our listeners and viewers, thank you so much. This is Best Case, Worst Case, signing off.
Best Case, Worst Case is an XG production. Produced by Francie Hakes, Josh Murphy, and Jim Clementi at Empire Studios LA. Engineered and edited by Matt Gergel. Music composed and performed by Simba Tsumba and hosted by Wondery.
You can listen to Best Case, Worst Case on your favorite listening app. We are on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
If you want to do something about child sexual abuse, Darkness Delight can help. Did you know that more than 90% of the time children are sexually abused by someone they know?
Jim, this isn't about stranger danger. It's about learning the true risks. Darkness to Light's training can help prevent, recognize, and react to child sexual abuse in your community.
When you make the decision to get involved, kids can be protected. It starts with you.
Visit www.d2l.org to take the training and learn more.
That's D, the number 2, L.org.